Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Well, after what is likely a huge Democratic win in the two U.S. Senate runoff races in Georgia, although the votes are still being counted, and the session of Congress today designed to count the Electoral College votes to make Joe Biden president, and the right-wing protest today in Washington, D.C., where Proud Boys, QAnon supporters, and others will demand that Congress not recognize Biden's victory. We're going to talk about all those topics and more with Jeff Cohen, the media critic. Jeff was the founding director of the Park Center for Independent Media at Ithaca College, where he was an associate professor of journalism. He founded the media watch group FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, in 1986, and co-founded the online activist group Roots Action in 2011. Cohen has co-produced documentary films, including The Corporate Coup d'Etat and All Governments Lie. He's the author of several books, including Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. He's been a TV commentator on CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC. And he was a senior producer of MSNBC's Phil Donahue primetime television show until it was terminated just 3 weeks before the Iraq invasion. And Jeff Cohen, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here. Thank you for coming on.
It's great to be with you. I'm a big supporter of independent media. As you know, I'm probably the only person who was a journalism professor for 10 years, and my focus, my specialty, was the importance of independent, non-corporate, non-conglomerated media.
Yeah, I got to ask you, you were on Fox News. Tell us a little bit about what you did on Fox News.
I was on Fox News every week for the first 5 years of Fox News. It wasn't quite as extreme. They hadn't got their right-wing footing totally in place, so a progressive like me was still allowed on the air. And I was on the weekend show Fox News Watch. And I must say that I had experience before that at CNN and experience after that on MSNBC, and I had more freedom to criticize on when I was on Fox News than the more middle-of-the-road channels. I was regularly criticizing Rupert Murdoch, the owner of the channel. I was regularly criticizing hosts of Fox News shows when I was on the Fox News program called Newswatch. And then I went to MSNBC in 2002 thinking it would be a better format for my views, less right-wing, more middle of the road. And it was at MSNBC that I ran up against all of the censorship when that channel was pushing for the Iraq invasion and I was trying to do journalism.
Phil Donahue was the host of the show that you produced, and they fired him.
They terminated the Donahue show, the primetime MSNBC Donahue show, 3 weeks before the invasion. The brass at NBC, which runs MSNBC, and the brass at MSNBC, they lied to the media and they said it was about ratings. Our show was the most watched program on MSNBC when we were canceled. The great news is, and the reason I love whistleblowers, and I explain this in my book, Cable News Confidential, the day after we were terminated, some whistleblower inside the leadership of NBC leaked memos to the press, internal NBC memos, that explained that the reason that Donahue's show was terminated by MSNBC was pure politics. The memo said things like, Donahue could be a home for the liberal anti-war agenda when our competitors will be waving the flag at every opportunity. Another memo said about Donahue, Donahue represents a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. He seems to delight in presenting guests who are anti-war, anti-Bush, or skeptical of the administration's motives, unquote. And, you know, I'd got into journalism because in a democracy, you're supposed to be able to question the leaders of your country and the leaders' motives. But in the run-up to the war at MSNBC, they weren't allowing journalism, and that's why they canceled. First, they canceled me. I had been an on-air pundit in the afternoon and then they canceled the whole Donahue show, which was their leading primetime show. So hey, I think you know, Rob, as well as anyone, I'm a critic of corporate mainstream media because I've seen the bias and censorship from the inside.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Cohen, you were fired, or, you know, Phil Donahue's show was terminated and you were let go there because you wouldn't go along with the kind of pro-war, I think, position that the network wanted to have at the time. Now it's hard to find anybody, including people high up in the Republican Party these days. President Trump now claims he's was against the Iraq invasion. You can't find anybody defending that war. In a sense, you were vindicated by taking that position way back in 2002.
There's no doubt we were vindicated. I mean, we were trying to put on the air UN weapons inspectors months before the invasion, who were saying, no, they don't have weapons of mass destruction. If they do, they're going to be degraded and worthless. So we were getting the real experts, and that's what was the mark against us. We were doing real journalism. We were asking the questions about the invasion of Iraq before our young men and women were sent overseas to kill or be killed. What's interesting is all of us got terminated. And those who in the media who were circulating all of these lies and exaggerations from the Bush-Cheney administration, they've seen their careers flourish. And NBC and MSNBC, their top military analyst today, is a guy named General Barry McCaffrey, and everything he said in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq is laughably wrong. So you're right that, I mean, it was a major failure of U.S. journalism, except for places like Democracy Now!, except for independent community radio, except for some of what were called the progressive blogosphere back in 2002, except for the Phil Donahue show, and we were terminated. And, you know, when my book came out, Cable News Confidential, I got an immediate email from Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota and former pro wrestler. And Jesse's email, I didn't really know this when I wrote my book, when they terminated at MSNBC the Phil Donahue show, we read in the newspapers that it was expected that our hour of prime time would be replaced on MSNBC by the Jesse Ventura show. And so, you know, Phil Donahue and I were stewing, we're waiting to see when the Ventura show started, and it never started. And so I get this email from Jesse Ventura after my book came out, Cable News Confidential, and he said, you should have mentioned me. You should have mentioned that they paid me millions of dollars, NBC did, to be the replacement for Phil Donahue, but when they heard that I was as critical of the invasion of Iraq as Phil Donahue was, they wouldn't let me on the air. So, you know, if you're wondering, Rob, and I know you're not because you've known me for decades, you know, why am I a critic of corporate mainstream media, including the allegedly liberal, and I don't buy that at all, the corporate liberal media, MSNBC or CNN? I know too much about the censorship that goes on. And remember, Jesse Ventura was a special forces soldier. You know, Jesse Ventura has a long history in the military, and when they learned at MSNBC, NBC, that Jesse was also a critic of the invasion of Iraq, they wouldn't let him on the air, but they paid him millions of dollars.
Wow, I didn't know that story. Yeah. Well, Jeff Cohen is our guest. He's the co-founder of Roots Action. He's a retired journalism professor at Ithaca College and the author of Cable News Confidential. He founded the media watch group FAIR, and for a while, he worked at MSNBC. He's also been on CNN and Fox News, and this is 88.5 FM. Jeff, do you think during 2002 and the early part of 2003 until March, it was a pretty quick turnaround to gin up the country to go to war and invade Iraq. Do you think that something similar could happen today? Could the media just get behind a president who wanted to go to war, and would they all follow suit?
I would say it might be a little worse today than it was then, and it was deplorable then. I see a lot of the people that want to take on Iran and want to keep getting involved deeper and deeper in these forever wars, they're flooding into the Joe Biden administration. The so-called national security team of the Joe Biden administration are people that brought about the Iraq invasion and other ridiculous invasions and interventions. The Secretary of State, this is why Roots Action, the online activism group that I co-founded, we started this campaign, nohoneymoon.org, or hashtag nohoneymoon, to challenge some of Biden's appointees and to make sure that, especially if the Democrats take the Senate, that we get a real progressive, a change from forever war and spending so much money on the military and not enough on working class and middle class people. So today, you've got the Biden administration putting forward for their Secretary of State, someone who's supposed to be the chief diplomat, someone who's supposed to help us stay out of wars. Biden has chosen his longtime aide, Anthony Blinken. And you probably remember this, Rob. In 2002, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee was chaired by Democrat Joe Biden. And they had hearings that were complete shams. And the person, the chair of the committee was Joe Biden. And the staff director of the committee who ran the hearings was Tony Blinken. And they had hour after hour, groups were going to them and saying, why don't you have this former UN weapons inspector? He knows what's really going on in Iraq, and they are not a threat. Why don't you have this foreign policy analyst? She's going to explain why it will be so dangerous and there'll be all these unexpected consequences if we invade in the Middle East in a country that's majority Shia. And none of those people were allowed in the hearings that Tony Blinken ran on behalf of Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chair Joe Biden. And then, so here you have a secular dictator overthrown by the U.S., Saddam Hussein, a deplorable figure. And it leads to violence, chaos, sectarian violence that they never had had in Iraq. It led to the growth of all these Islamist terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda of Iraq, which became ISIS. It led to a complete mess for the Middle East. It led to horror for young U.S. soldiers who came back maimed or were killed over there or are suffering PTSD to this day. It was just a horrible thing. And then 8 years after the Iraq invasion, Tony Blinken, now in the Obama administration, is pushing for the overthrow of the secular dictator of Libya with no plan of, you know, how do you implement something better? And Libya is a completely failed state with the rise of terror groups and warlords. So you have these interventionists, Rob, you're right, that it's not an open thing. But in the leadership of the Democratic Party, you have these dead-enders who still believe in forever war. And they were yelling when they thought Trump would reduce the number of troops in Iraq or Syria or Afghanistan. There's a real war hawk faction in the Democratic Party, and you will never hear criticism of them on MSNBC or CNN. That's why I'm such a believer in independent media. I mean, I try to listen to or watch Democracy Now! Every day, where I hear about these dangerous factions in the Democratic Party. MSNBC will never criticize a Democrat. Fox News will never criticize a Republican. And, you know, that's not journalism, that's partisanship. So I like journalism. That's why I pay attention to independent outlets like Community Radio, like Democracy Now!, like The Intercept or CommonDreams.org. And thankfully, independent media are growing today, actual journalistic media. nonpartisan media.
Is there anything the public could do to try to make sure that advocates of peace get on the networks like CNN or MSNBC or Fox? I noticed that occasionally in recent times, Fox has had a few advocates for peace on, but not it's not a regular thing. Is there a way that the public could have some impact?
Yes, I would encourage people, if you believe there should be debates over foreign policy, if you believe that, you know, all these years, you know, what has it been, 19 years of Afghanistan occupation, that we should be debating that endless, the longest war in U.S. history, I would encourage people to go to fair.org and become a media activist with others who want more diversity in the media and more debates. And FAIR has put a lot of pressure on mainstream media, and to the degree occasionally a peace voice has gotten on public TV or public radio, it's often because of pressure. I can remember after FAIR did an embarrassing report on the PBS NewsHour and how militarist and corporatist and against the public interest its list of experts were. They actually had Noam Chomsky on the show. You know, it was the one and only time. He never got back on.
It's interesting that you say that because, you know, if you listen to Fox, they claim that CNN and MSNBC are bastions of socialism and communism and you know, peace activism and all sorts of ultra-liberal behavior. But yet you're making the point that when it comes to the issues of peace, there's really no debate on MSNBC or CNN. I think there's an effort to gin up concern in the U.S. about China and Iran. There's a lot of fear-mongering going on out there, and you see that on Fox a lot, fear-mongering about Iran and China.
Yeah, and on MSNBC, you see fear-mongering about Russia day after day, and it's going to get worse. I mean, in the last few days, Biden announced that Victoria Nuland will be in the administration. Victoria Nuland is famous for a leaked phone call. I can't say the word on radio, but she basically chose, when she was at the State Department under Hillary Clinton, she basically chose the leaders of the government of Ukraine. And on the audio tape that leaked out, probably the Russians hacked it. Someone hacked it. She's talking about how this guy would be great as the prime minister. This guy wouldn't be good. No, we don't want him. And then the person on the other end of the line says to Victoria Nuland, one of our top State Department people then, and she'll be even more top this year, the person says to Nuland, well, shouldn't we talk to the EU and see what they have in mind for who should be the leaders of Ukraine? And she famously says, F the EU. You know, but at any rate, yes, there's warmongering on all of the channels. I would say the one voice that ever questions forever wars is on Fox, and that's Tucker Carlson, who's a horrible racist and immigrant basher. But he does repeatedly question the military-industrial complex and why are we in these forever wars. You don't hear that from Rachel Maddow or Chris Hayes. You don't hear it from CNN. On CNN and MSNBC, they have this regular parade of former CIA chiefs, former secretaries of state and defense or assistant secretaries of state or defense. These people all were wrong on the Iraq invasion. That many of them were part of the Libya intervention, which was a disaster in 2011. And they never have to say they're sorry because no one ever does journalism and asks them a tough question. That's why we were kicked off the air at MSNBC with the Donahue Show. But you're on a station, Rob, that has Democracy Now, where they have real foreign policy experts talking about these forever wars, and wouldn't it be great if we could maybe move some of the money that goes, I'm not talking about cutting soldier salaries, I'm talking about the money for these weapon systems that don't work or we don't need, the hundreds of military bases. Wouldn't it be great if some of that money could be diverted to health care, education, housing, environmental uplift, But you don't ever hear that on the corporate media, except maybe once in a while in a very deformed way from Tucker Carlson, oddly enough, on Fox.
Yeah, $740 billion this year, I think.
It gets bigger and bigger, and the Democratic leadership does not challenge it.
Gore Vidal used to talk about this because we don't really remember our history, and we don't discuss it, and we don't debate it. And he used to call it the United States of Amnesia.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Jeff Cohen is our guest. He's the founder of the Media Watch Group FAIR. He's also a former ACLU attorney. He's got quite a resume. He used to work for MSNBC. He's written lots of articles for the Huffington Post, Common Dreams, Truth Out, USA Today, The Washington Post, The Los Angeles Times, The Boston Globe, Atlanta Constitution, and The Miami Herald. And you're listening to 88.5 FM. All right, Jeff, so it looks like the Democrats, I think surprising a lot of people, yesterday won two U.S. Senate seats in Georgia, and that opens up some possibilities for Joe Biden if he were to choose to become the next FDR. Let's talk about that for a moment. First of all, what did you think of the outcome of the election yesterday in Georgia?
It's one of the happiest days of my life. As you know, I've been an activist for 50 years, you know, since I was a teenager during the anti-Vietnam War and civil rights days. That's when I became active in 1968, 69. And this is one of the happiest days of my life because we have started this no honeymoon campaign, no honeymoon for the Democrats. And now there are less excuses. If Ossoff wins and the Democrats have the House and the Senate, then Biden will not have excuses. The people that helped Biden win, that were key to his win, were people of color, young activists, progressive activists. You know, at Roots Action, we had this massive campaign called Vote Trump Out in Swing States, Then Challenge Biden. We got all of these people who might have been thinking, oh, I hate Biden, he's a warmonger, I'm going to sit this one out, or I'm going to vote Green Party. We spent huge amounts of money with a huge social media campaign in swing states. We changed, Arizona was a big win. We were active in Wisconsin was a big win. Obviously, Georgia was a big win for Biden over Trump. We know why Biden won. He won because a lot of progressives who didn't necessarily love Biden worked their asses off. And it was a narrow win in key states that have changed. Why have they changed? Because of progressive activism. Why did that happen yesterday? It wasn't overnight. It's years of activism, especially activists of color and young activists, have changed Georgia. We were very active in Arizona. Same thing. It was traditionally a Republican state. And the racism of the Republican Party against Latinos and the growth of the young Latino voter in Arizona and other young voters made the difference in that narrow win of Biden over Trump. So in terms of Georgia, if this holds and Ossoff goes to the Senate, then Biden has no excuse. And I'm glad you brought up Franklin Roosevelt, the most popular Democratic president in history. Why was he popular? Well, the right wing said he's a socialist. He's a dangerous socialist. He's bringing about a socialist revolution. But everything that he delivered, FDR, in terms of the right to join a union, putting people to work that corporations were not putting to work with government jobs, including putting poets and painters and artists to work, not just works projects. He started for senior Social Security. He started a social safety net for women with dependent children. That was the beginning of aid to families with dependent children. He took these regulations on Wall Street to prevent another Wall Street crash. The corporate elite hated him. The media hated him. That's when we had newspapers were the dominant format, and 95-97% of newspapers opposed FDR and said he's a dangerous communist, he's a dangerous socialist. But if you deliver, and some of those measures were socialist, when the government puts people to work, because big business can't employ them, that's a socialist measure. But it was hugely popular. So this label of, yo, you're a communist, you're a red, if you're delivering for working class people, like we're hoping that Biden will deliver a $15 federal minimum wage, there's nothing stopping him. We're hoping Biden will cancel student debt. That would be a huge stimulus to the economy, especially, and student debt is possessed disproportionately by black people and Latinos. It's a wonderful way of stimulating the economy. Ending the forever wars. Having universal health care. We're the only advanced society where they link your health care to a job. And if you watch the Democratic Party debates on MSNBC and CNN, over and over, the moderators and the questioners from CNN and MSNBC, they were talking about how great it was. People love their private insurance. People want their insurance through their job. And then COVID hit. And millions of people lost their jobs, and therefore they lost their health insurance. You shouldn't have health insurance linked to a job. We know that. We need a Green New Deal. You brought up Roosevelt. I didn't. He had the New Deal. It was hugely popular. It led to him winning election after election. He put people to work. He put government on the side of the middle class and the working class and the poor, and not on the side of the 1% rich. A Green New Deal is a way of transforming our economy toward renewables and providing millions of union wage jobs. So, again, I'm thrilled about the election in Georgia. It will eliminate excuses on the part of the Democratic leadership and Biden-Harris, and it will lead to progressive organizing, making these demands. It's time for big change where you deliver for working class people. Otherwise, the Republicans will come storming back in 2022, just like they did in 1994 after Clinton's first 2 years, just like they did after Obama's first 2 years in 2010. If you want to stop the Republicans from storming back, you have to deliver big for the voters.
So that raises the question, where do you think Joe Biden is politically? Because you said that, you know, he was in favor of this really fruitless invasion of Iraq that cost so many lives on everybody's side, cost so many dollars, and now you can't find anybody that supports it, and he hasn't apologized, his aides haven't apologized, but where does he stand politically, and is there anybody in his cabinet so far that might be whispering to him, Joe, you have the opportunity to become the next FDR?
There are some people whispering to him that. Again, we've won some victories. The Roots Action No Honeymoon campaign, we campaigned against Michelle Flournoy, who looked like she was going to be the Secretary of Defense, another war hawk, and Biden chose not to choose her. There are a lot of environmental groups that were lobbying against what it looked like Biden was going to do, which was take Obama's Secretary of Energy, Ernest Moniz, who's completely tied to the nuclear power industry and the fossil fuel industry. Biden was talking about just reappointing Moniz, and environmental groups raised hell. And instead, we have the former governor of Michigan as the Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm, who has talked about the need to leave fossil fuels in the ground. That's a big victory. We've already won victories. So where is Biden? He's malleable. There are people whispering in his ears, you know, the country is suffering. We've gone through 40 years of neoliberal predatory capitalism where the wealth and income has gushed up to the top 1%. Taxes on the rich and the corporations have been cut. You'll remember during the 1950s with the Republican president, Dwight Eisenhower, the top tax rate on the richest people was 90%, the income tax. So, I mean, we've gone from the 70s to today, where the wealth and income has gushed to the top. There's all this suffering and despair among the poor, the working class, and the embattled middle class. And Biden is in a position with both houses of Congress, it looks like, to change things. And there are some good people on his Council of Economic Advisors, people that are allied with labor and workers. There are some good people on his environmental team that really want to transform the economy away from fossil fuels, and that's a job creator. You know, when you refurbish buildings, when you retrofit every school, every government building in the country, those are jobs that cannot be exported. So we know what the agenda is. The progressive agenda has been enunciated. Bernie Sanders helped do it. The Squad and the progressive leaders in Congress have done it. We know what the big new deal would be. And the issue is Biden going to listen to the people he's traditionally listened to, which is the corporate donor class? Or is he going to say, hey, I'm an old guy. I don't need these people anymore. I'm going to deliver for the working class. That's going to be the battle over Joe Biden. His instinct has been for decades, especially when he was looking to run for reelection, has always been to serve the banks. You know, he comes from Delaware. He's always been good for the banks and the credit card companies and not great for middle-class consumers. He voted wrong on, as you say, the Iraq invasion. He voted wrong on NAFTA and these trade deals. He voted wrong on the crime bill, which led to mass incarceration. I mean, his history in the Democratic Party is he's in the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, not the progressive wing. But the progressive movement's never been stronger, never been better organized, better networked, thanks to the Internet. And more astute about the need to always challenge Democratic leadership. You can't win elections and then go to sleep if you're an activist. The activism should intensify after the election so that the pressure is on the Democrats to deliver. If they don't deliver, the Republicans will storm back in 2022 like they've done for the last two Democratic presidents. Remember, Clinton had a Democratic House and Senate, and he dithered, he vacillated, he hesitated. Obama had a Democratic House and Senate, and he bailed out Wall Street, but he wouldn't put in what progressive economists were asking for, which was a foreclosure freeze to bail out Main Street, and most of the, disproportionately, the homeowners that lost their homes. It was record-breaking home foreclosures in 2009, Obama's first year. They were disproportionately Black and Latino households. So again, if you dither, if you try to make deals and try to go slow and appease the Republicans, then the Republicans will come storming back in 2 years. We've got to save Joe Biden from himself.
Well, our guest is Jeff Cohen, and our phone number is 813-239-9663. If you want to call and ask Jeff a question, Jeff is the founder of the media watch group FAIR. He did that in 1986. He's also the co-founder of the online activist group Roots Action, and he was a senior producer of MSNBC's Phil Donahue primetime show until it was terminated 3 weeks before the Iraq invasion, and this is 88.5 FM. Jeff, FDR and the Democrats put in place things like Social Security and the minimum wage and Medicare and a whole host of programs. At the time, they were all called socialists for doing it. Harry Truman in 1952 said, socialism is a scare word they have hurled at every advance the people have made in the last 20 years. Socialism is what they call public power. Socialism is what they called Social Security. Truman went on to say that socialism is what they called farm price support. Socialism is what they call bank deposit insurance. Socialism is what they called the growth of free and independent labor organizations. Socialism is their name for almost anything that helps all the people. That's a Harry Truman quote from October 10th, 1952. That term socialism is going to be used if Biden moves in the direction of raising the minimum wage, if he does anything to improve the health care system. I think that's what these people are protesting, partly. The Tea Party protested it under Obamacare, and now these Proud Boys are protesting it today in Washington, D.C. It's part of their protest. How do you fight back against the claims that somehow you've got a foreign concept when everybody seems to accept Medicare and Social Security? FDR was called socialist for implementing those things, but how do you fight back against the socialism charge?
Medicare and Social Security are two of the most popular government programs in world history. I disagree with your concept. You said Biden's going to be denounced as a socialist if he raises the minimum wage. I would phrase it different. Biden's going to be denounced as a socialism even if he does nothing, if he doesn't raise the minimum wage, if he vacillates. He's going to be denounced as that's all they have is the label of socialism. There's no one in American life who's advocating for communist dictatorship. You know, mostly authoritarianism and dictatorial impulses have come from the Trump team. Bernie Sanders is an open socialist. He believes in democracy, diversity, freedom of press, freedom of speech, not jailing the opposition. So there's no one in American political life who's for a communist dictatorship. Are there people in American life that are for these socialist measures as Harry Truman laid them out in that quote from 1952? Of course. And socialist measures like public education, Social Security, Medicare, are popular. So what we've had in our society, especially for the last 40 years, is the income and wealth has been gushing upward, because the government has operated on behalf of the 1%. One could say that's socialism for the rich, socialism for the elite. I think what's very popular, even with Republican voters, by the way, I mean, the minimum wage, raising the minimum wage passed in Florida, not a, you know, a bastion of communist agitation. So these measures that will be called socialist, maybe some of them deserve to be called socialist reforms. I don't care what you call them. But if you deliver for the working class, you will win elections. So I would rephrase your question, Rob. I would say if Biden does not raise the minimum wage, if Biden does not cancel student debt, if Biden does not have a big program for putting people to work through a Green New Deal or something like it, then Biden will be denounced as a socialist and he will lose. He will be denounced as a socialist no matter what he does. That's all the right wing has.
Hmm.
But he's got to deliver. If he's denounced as a socialist, as Roosevelt was in every newspaper editorial year after year after year, but he's delivering measures that put the government on the side of the majority of people instead of the corporate elite, that's going to help Biden win. And Democrats win elections like it helped Franklin Roosevelt and Democrats win during the 1930s.
But, you know, you can't get those quotes onto Fox or MSNBC or CNN where most people get their news. You can't hold up this quote from Harry Truman,
right,
where he was fighting against the term. I mean, how do you get history onto TV in a way that gets to everybody?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, that brings us to the problem of the media. And, you know, for 10 years, I was at the Ithaca College focusing on independent media. Independent media has boomed. You know, we know that during time of war and elections and crisis, people turn to mainstream television. We know that. But if you look over the long haul, like the last 15 years, progressive independent media have grown. Millions of people every day get their news from independent non-corporate outlets. That includes WMNF and Democracy Now! Nationwide. That includes TheIntercept.com. That includes CommonDreams.org. That includes web TV shows like The Young Turks. If you add it together, while it doesn't compete with Fox or MSNBC in terms of numbers, you still have, for the first time in U.S. history, millions of people every day have access to non-corporate news from serious journalists and serious analysts. So I'm optimistic on that score. Another reason I was working so hard to defeat Trump and elect Biden is because we can now change the Federal Communications Commission and we can protect the Internet. And I know there are going to be people that are going to try to, Zephyr Teachout is the great analyst of monopolies. There will be progressives leaning on Biden to do something about the monopolies of Facebook and, that have disseminated so much disinformation. And Zephyr Teachout believes they need to be heavily regulated or broken up. I mean, social media has become a pawn of disinformation in the hands of powerful groups. But the internet has also been a boon for independent, journalistic, nonprofit media. So I'm sort of optimistic that more and more I hear people say, you know, I used to listen to MSNBC, but it's all the same story. It's always, what did Trump tweet today? And
yeah, they can't do more than one or two stories a day.
Yeah,
they're very limited.
They're always called breaking news, even when they report, what was on the previous 12 hours. It's always breaking. It's continually breaking. But I do hear from people that say, look, I used to listen to Rachel Maddow. I used to listen to Chris Hayes and watch MSNBC. But then I heard about this thing called Democracy Now, where they cover the biggest issues facing the world, war, foreign policy, environmental problems and solutions. And here's activist groups proposing solutions to these giant problems. But on I watch TV, and on Fox, it's all pro-Trump, and on MSNBC, it's all anti-Trump. But frankly, you're getting corporate propaganda if you watch any cable news.
Well, Jeff Cohen is a co-founder of RootsAction.org. He's a retired journalism professor from Ithaca College, author of Cable News Confidential. In 1986, he founded the media watch group FAIR, which produces the Counterspin radio show that we have on our HD3 channel every Saturday morning. Jeff, let's take some calls from listeners.
Great.
All right, let's go to Jeff, who's in Plant City. Jeff, you're on with Jeff Cohen. What would you like to ask? Jeff, we can't hear you.
I'm sorry, is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
I have inferior technology. I was really surprised about what he said about how MSNBC, wouldn't put voices on there that were anti-war and only use the retired generals. I don't know if it protected their sponsors, who I seem to be, big defense companies a lot of times. Personally, I've always felt, because it's...
Yeah, Jeff, you're breaking up again.
I'm sorry. The power to declare war is extraordinary. So we need to remove the profit motive for war. We've always been told a steady diet of socialism equals communism.
Okay, and Jeff, I'm just going to drop you, but I think we got the point. Jeff Cohen, what would you say back to Jeff in Plant City?
I agree with him 100%. You need to take the profit motive out of war. And it was the Republican president, Dwight Eisenhower, that warned about the power of the permanent military-industrial complex. If we had a President Bernie Sanders, I think he'd be talking about, defense industry being nonprofit, nationalized, so you don't have these corporations who want war and therefore are always pushing for war, and they fund think tanks and TV programs that push for war. So no doubt about it. There's one good news I'll say real quickly. There was a bipartisan, it was very rare, a bipartisan War Resolution Act initiated in the Senate by Bernie Sanders working with Mike Lee, a Republican, where this vicious war that the Saudis and the UAE have waged against Yemen, which was started under the Obama administration, the U.S. support for that war, and intensified under the Trump administration, the U.S. support for the Saudi monarchs. There was a bipartisan resolution to end U.S. support for that war, and it was put on Trump's desk, and he vetoed it. And there wasn't enough votes to override the veto. So there are groups already demanding that we get that War Resolution Act put on Biden's desk, and we get the U.S. support for this vicious war. The biggest humanitarian crisis in the world today is Yemen, and the U.S. is a big part of it. That could be reversed within a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I'm so excited about the ability. That's one that's a no-brainer. If Biden does not sign that, then we know we have a real problem, and we'll learn that very early.
Let's go to Jeremiah, who's calling from Sarasota. Jeremiah, you're on with Jeff Cohen. What's your question?
Good morning. enjoying the discussion. I'm fairly progressive leaning. I'm a big fan of playgrounds, but when I hear about student loan forgiveness, it's kind of a knee jerk for me, and I'd like to hear a little maybe explanation on how valuable it could be from my perspective as a college graduate. I remember so many of my compatriots, some of which never obtained a degree, that were really well funded because of loans. They had fancy cars, sharp cars. They were always going out, and I just wonder a portion of it, when I look at my student cost, 2/3 of it was housing, and 1/3 of it was actually tuition and university expenses. And I just wonder about forgiving debt. If we take it on the, maybe if no degree was achieved, it's really intangible debt. And how is that any different than the other Americans out there that didn't attempt college but might have tried some other enrichment that are still drowning in that little bit of intangible debt?
Like, okay, well, that's a good question. Jeremiah, thanks a lot. Thanks for the question. Let's go to Jeff Cohen. Jeff, what would you say?
Yeah, it's a great question. Again, I'm for a series of programs that will help working class and embattled middle class people, whether they're carrying student debt or not. But the student debt problem has just gone through the roof. It's gone. When I went to college in the late 60s, a great public University of Michigan, my tuition, I think, was about $600 a year. Now, University of Michigan is almost unaffordable tuition-wise. So I think Jeremiah is right that foregoing federal student debt will help vast numbers of people and be great for the economy in general. But we need other programs that will help people that aren't carrying student debt. And that's why I've tried to mention a bunch of these other programs. But, I mean, under the Higher Education Act of 1965, the president has great discretion to forgo this debt. That's why there's so much emphasis on it. And in the last few years, it isn't just housing. I mean, the tuition costs have exploded in the last couple decades. And I believe public college should be free or cheap. That's how it is in Europe. That's how it was when I grew up. I grew up before neoliberal capitalism. I grew up in Michigan where there was expanding middle class. And public college was cheap for a lower middle class family. You know, we've had this takeover of our government by the corporate elite and neoliberal predatory capitalism. And all of the burden has been shifted to the working class and the middle class, including student tuition. And so I believe that, yes, some people will be left out of the cancellation of student debt, but it'll help society as a whole, and we have to help people that aren't carrying student debt by all sorts of other measures.
Yeah, and at least we have to debate this on MSNBC and not just the same things over and over again. Jeff,
wait, maybe Trump might have tweeted something today.
We've got another Jeff. Everybody who has called us so far or emailed us has a J in their first name. Jeff writes, I've heard a lot about the idea that Donald Trump has committed crimes and that he should be prosecuted. I agree. He should be investigated and pay the price if wrongdoings are found. I find it inconsistent, though, that we got into the Iraq War, which appears to have been illegal, and I don't think anybody has paid the price for that wrongdoing, writes Jeff.
I agree with him 100%. Part of the problem with that he's describing on why no one paid the price for that, no one paid the price for the Wall Street graft and fraud that brought down the global economy and had middle-class people in Greece jumping out of windows. No one paid the price for that. Part of it is when Obama took office, he and Holder, his attorney general, said, we want to look forward and not backward, which is crazy. If you don't hold people accountable, especially people in the governing elite, if you don't, and the corporate elite, if you don't hold them accountable for criminal activity, and in Wall Street it was fraud and graft, then the crimes will keep being committed. And Wall Street is as powerful now as ever. There are some economists that worry about another Wall Street crash because they're so unbridled. And this idea, you're going to hear it from Biden, just like we heard it from Obama. We're not going to hold Trump accountable because we're looking forward, not backward. You can't move forward unless you learn from the history and you learn from mistakes of the past.
Jeff, Ernie in Port Richey writes, along the lines of the interview, Gore Vidal's Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace is a good book to read, writes Ernie. And then let's go to Art in Largo for a question. Art, you're on. What's your question for Jeff Cohen?
Yes, Jeff, we Americans are really lucky to have investigative journalists like you, and we thank you.
Thank you.
When discussing the Iraq War, one seldom hears why the U.S. government and media insisted on having this war. Why is that? And was Israel's security a reason?
No doubt. There were several reasons, and the Israel right or wrong faction and the government of Israel was obviously one of the factors pushing for the war. I think oil interests were pushing for the war. I think military industrial interests were pushing for the war. So you had a lot of powerful factions pushing for the war, and I was in the mainstream media at the time, and they wouldn't let mainstream journalists do our jobs. And the few of us that were fighting to do our jobs, to ask the tough questions before the war began, we were terminated. And it wasn't just the Donahue Show. When I wrote my book, Cable News Confidential, I started hearing from people who lost their jobs as columnists for a local or regional daily. Lots of people lost their jobs for trying to do journalism to try to figure out why are we in this war. It was obviously good for my employer. At the time, MSNBC was owned by General Electric. General Electric makes a lot from war production, and they make a lot from rebuilding countries that the U.S. destroys. So there are a lot of economic interests involved, and there are geopolitical interests, including the military-industrial complex and the Israel right or wrong faction.
Mm-hmm. All right, Art, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question. Jeff, we're almost out of time, but I got to ask you, you've got these militant groups that are having demonstrations around the country. There have been clashes between groups like the Proud Boys and Antifa around the country. Do you think we're headed for a civil war, and do you think that right-wing media is pushing us in that direction?
There's no doubt. I mean, I'm in a motel room here in Florida where I can watch One America News and Newsmax, and they're even more slavishly pro-Trump and pro-Proud Boys. And I mean, the media, the right-wing media is insidious. I helped produce a documentary that people can get online, and I encourage everyone to get this documentary. It's called The Brainwashing of My Dad.
Oh, yeah. We played it on the air.
All right. Well, you know, Jen Senko is the great director. I'm in that movie. It really explains the power of right-wing media. And, yes, it is threat of civil war. Yes, it's serious. The good news is the victory in Georgia will help. Again, if progressives don't go to sleep and they push the Biden administration to really start delivering and having a new kind of government, that's going to really deplete the resources and the fan base and the initiative and the enthusiasm on the far right wing. If you don't deliver, think about the beginnings of fascism in Italy or in Germany. If there is economic chaos and all the money is just going to the top and there's huge suffering, that's when fascist and right-wing and racist and nativist movements grow. So Biden's in a position to really, and I would say progressives pushing Biden are in a position to really minimize the power. Trumpism is not going away. Trump is not going away. The Trump family is not going away. But they can be weakened if the Democrats deliver. That's why I encourage people to go to nohoneymoon.org.
All right, Jeff Cohen, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF. We'll have to get you back.
It's Sounds great.
All right, Rob. Thanks, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Jeff is a co-founder of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and co-founder of RootsAction.org. If you want to comment about today's show, call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks to Jessica Green. She's been our phone producer today. Stay tuned for the Midpoint program with NOLA. This is WMNF.